The Geography of Palestine, a Photographic Tour by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract of this talk. An introduction to the geography of the Holy Land, its major physical features, and the political divisions, cities, roads, and fortifications at the times of Jesus. Features photos of the sites as they look today. We're going to start out then with the physical features of Palestine. We're using the term Palestine for the territory in which the events of Old and New Testament took place. We'll be looking at the New Testament period. We're going to look at the major regions, physical features, major regions going from west to east. Then we're going to look at some smaller geographic features going from north to south. Then we're going to look at the major bodies of water, seas, lakes, rivers. So, let's attack that. Here in our next panel, we have a map of the major regions, and we have them, the major regions numbered from east to west, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then at the bottom of the page, we have a cross-section drawn approximately through Bethlehem that shows the same numbering. Item 1 is what we'll call the coastal plain. We'll come back and look at each of these in turn. Item 2, the Shephelah, sometimes called the lowlands. Item 3, the hill country. On our map at right, the coastal plain is shown in kind of a green, and the Shephelah in a more light green, if you like, and the hill country in kind of a darkish rose color. Number 4, the Rift Valley, which is shown in a dark green and brown. And then the Transjordan Plateau, number 5, about the same color as the hill country. The colors there are actually elevation colors on that particular map. The cross-section down at the bottom left is strongly exaggerated vertically, but if you look at the scale on the left, you can see the number there, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 feet running up above sea level, and then some of that below sea level down to the bottom of the Dead Sea, and over against that a scale of miles, and we're looking at something like about 10 miles, and the horizontal corresponds to about 1,000 feet in the vertical, so very, very considerable exaggeration vertically. Well, let's look at each of those regions. First of all, then, here's the coastal plain. And the coastal plain is low, near the coast, near sea level, and rather flat. It's fertile where it's not too salty or sandy. Obviously a problem with seawater making certain parts of it salty, and therefore not very fertile for that reason. And then a lot of that is rather beach-type sort of thing with sand and lacking some of the elements needed for fertile agricultural operation. From a military perspective, this territory was easily invaded. No real barriers to travel, although it could be marshy in places, and able to accommodate chariots and such, which were rather important for the Old Testament period, the late Old Testament period. The terrain pretty smooth, and it was rather open to the south, so that this was a territory in which Egypt found rather free play for their activity. From the north, it was not quite so open. As you can see looking up on our map there towards where the term Mediterranean Sea is, you can see an arm of material of highlands stretching out towards the coast. We'll come back and talk about that later. But the coastal plain could be reached from the north through some passes by going around the end of this highland or going through the passes that show just as yellow in the diagram there. The coastal plain looks kind of like this. It's a photograph taken from inside a bus on a trip I made over there in 1975. 4, I believe this was. So you get some reflections in the sky, or interior reflections off the bus window, but you can see the ground is pretty flat here. Another picture of the coastal plain here, showing some of the agriculture, and again, very much emphasizing its flatness. The Shvela, or lowlands, are the next region inward from the coast. They're somewhat higher than the coastal plain. They are lower than the hill country. The terrain here is rather rolling, not gorges and such, but not flat either. Travel is typically along the valleys, which are flat enough, wide enough to be a good terrain, and the hills are often isolated hills, so it doesn't make sense to travel on them. The territory from a military perspective is relatively easy to invade, with armies moving up and down the coastal plain, but then conquest purposes moving into the Shvela. Here's a picture of the Shvela at Bet Shemesh, and you can see some hill in the background here, and a rather wide valley here in the middle ground, and then the foreground here is the the ruins of Bet Shemesh and some school kids who are out on a field trip of some sort. Another picture of the Shvela in the foreground from the tell of the Old Testament city of Azekah. And then in the far background, we're actually looking up onto the hill country, so the bluish-gray hills there in the background of the hill country. But the low green hills between us and that are the Shvela, and then the flat sort of agricultural area as well. Moving on to the hill country, this is characterized by rather different terrain than the Shvela. Here are sharp hills with V-shaped valleys. resembles in the eastern United States, West Virginia probably more closely than other territories. The travel is typically along the ridges. The ridges are often connected here, and travel in the valleys is rather difficult because they are steep-sided gorges with narrow bottoms and rocky and that sort of thing, so it's easier to travel along the ridges. Rather difficult to invade this territory because the ridges run at right angles to the direction from which you would be invading, so you have to work your way up onto that territory, and without building rather elaborate roads, it's really not good territory for chariots. Some of the same problem in West Virginia, where it's been rather difficult and expensive to build roads. Agriculture does take place in the hill country. It's perhaps not as easy as in the coastal plain and the Shvela, but the agriculture here will use terraces, as we'll see in a couple of pictures here later on. that protects against the slope erosion and makes it hard to do, of course, big fields. The rainfall is actually quite good west of the ridge, which runs up the middle of the hill country. Your prevailing winds at this latitude, at these latitudes, are from the west, so the weather is coming typically across the Mediterranean Sea and picking up moisture there, and leaving some of that on the coastal plain and the Shvela. But as the air rises to go up over the hill country, this typically will run the humidity of the air up over 100%, and so rainfall is really rather good west of the ridge of the hill country. Once you get east of the hill country, however, you get into what would be considered a rain shadow. The air is falling now and warming, and its humidity is going down, and the upshot is that you do not really get much rain at all east of the ridge, a rather deserty area. And that is not overcome again until the air rises to go up onto the Transjordan Plateau. So the east side of the hill country and the Rift Valley, as we'll see next, are rather dry areas as far as rainfall is concerned. Here's a picture of the hill country from Kfar Etzion, south of Jerusalem, and you can clearly see the natural terracing in the hill across from us in the middle ground. And then to a a closer view of the hill to the left side of us here, which we're looking along the terracing. Well, basically, this terracing was used by, this natural terracing was used by the farmers to make an artificial terracing by putting stones on the, just at the top of the bluff where the terrace drops off, and trapping then soil in that so that you've got fairly flat, wide areas with the good soil in them in which some grain would be grown, but also grapevines and fig trees and things of that sort. You can also see the deep V-shaped valley here that's running at right angles to our line of sight, and the dark shadow of it here that made travel in this area rather difficult. We move over then to our fourth region, the Rift Valley. The Rift Valley is actually a geologic fault, this is a split between two plates, tectonic plates, and has pulled apart and allowed the land in the rift to slip down. That's what geologists call a graben, German for grave. Geological fault. This particular fault extends southward into Africa and northward into Syria. So in our particular picture here, the Dead Sea is located just below where we have the word valley, and the Sea of Galilee some miles to the north of that, and you can see the narrow rift running between them, and also south of the Dead Sea, and also to a lesser extent north of the Sea of Galilee. The valley itself is a wide U-shaped valley. The Jordan River has carved its own much smaller valley in the middle of this rift. The climate in the Rift Valley is hot and dry. It's in the rain shadow of the hill country. To grow crops here, the ground is good. To grow crops, you have to have water and have to use irrigation. And that has been done on a small scale from far back in antiquity and is being done on a rather large scale today. Here's a picture of the Rift Valley from the Crusader fortress Belvoir, which you can't see is behind us in the picture. Looking out where the figures are standing is kind of just the edge of where the hill country drops off into the Rift Valley, and then all your middle ground here is Rift Valley. You can see some water there, some ponds that have been created down in the Rift Valley for, I think, raising fish. And then at the far side, you can see hills going up again, and that will be the Transjordan Plateau that they're going up to there. So you're looking across perhaps 10, 15 miles of Rift Valley here between the high land that we're standing on here and the highland across the way. Here's a picture taken considerably further down the Rift Valley, near just north of Jericho, or some miles north of Jericho. And we're down in the Rift Valley here. You can see kind of a badlands-looking area there between us and the hills in the background. And that's the area through which the Jordan River actually flows. And then you're looking up onto the Transjordan Plateau in the background there. That brings us to the last of our subdivisions here, the Transjordan Plateau, the furthest east in the land of Israel, a rather flat tableland. It's at equal or higher elevation, typically, than the hill country is. And so at its western edge, it's relatively well-watered. The air from the Mediterranean has come up off the Mediterranean across the coastal plain and the Shvelah, and then wrings out some of its moisture as it goes up over ridge of the hill country, and then it dries off considerably as it drops down the eastern slopes of the hill country into the Rift Valley, and then comes back up again as it begins to get at a higher elevation than the hill country is. The humidity comes up again, and it wrings out the rest of it, and then as you go eastward from this western edge, it becomes kind of desert. So you actually go into the Syrian desert east of this territory. Well, here's a picture of the Transjordan Plateau and the fertile soil here on it. This is taken just east of the Sea of Galilee. And here's another picture on the Transjordan Plateau. But here we are looking southwest from up east of the Sea of Galilee. You can see a little of the Sea of Galilee just to the right middle edge of this picture, to the right of the fellows and girls standing there. They're part of our of a class that we were in geography of Israel. And we're all standing on the Transjordan Plateau. The direction of the shot carries us down, looking across the Rift Valley to the southwest, and then up onto the hill country in the distance there. And the hills that you can see there are hill country southwest of the Sea of Galilee. Well, now we're going to look at some of the smaller geographical features of Palestine, starting in the north and working southward. Letter A, way up in the northeast corner of this map, is Mount Hermon. Mount Tabor and Galilee are marked at B. The Jezreel Valley at C. Mount Carmel at D. The wilderness of Judea at E. And the Negev at F. So let's look at each of those in turn. Here's Mount Hermon seen from a distance. Mount Hermon is the highest peak in the Palestine area, and its elevation is over 9,000 feet. As you can see here, far in the background, it is snow-covered, and it is the southernmost peak of what is called the Anti-Lebanon Range, and the peak is generally snow-covered all year, as we see in this particular picture. Moving south to Galilee and Mount Tabor, Galilee is a hilly region, the northern extension of the hill country. It's the best watered area in Palestine because as we move south through Palestine, you not only have this effect of coastal area fairly well watered and then even better watered, if anything, up on the hill country, and then very arid as you go down the Rift Valley and then somewhat watered as you come back up on the Transjordan Plateau and then drying out eastward to into a desert. You also have another effect that as we come south, you're beginning to get down to the edge of the north temperate zone where rainfall goes down rather substantially. So the northern parts of Israel have better rain than the southern parts of Israel by a good deal. Galilee is in the best watered area in Palestine, similar to the eastern United States, around 40 inches of rain per year. The northern part of Galilee is higher and is called Upper Galilee, and the southern part is lower and called Lower Galilee. Galilee is reasonably cool, except when you get down around the Sea of Galilee, which is actually below sea level, so it gets rather hot down there. Mount Tabor, shown in this particular picture, is about 1,900 feet tall and is an isolated peak. Well, here's a picture of Galilee. We are standing on a bluff above the Sea of Galilee, which, however, is behind us. And so we are looking rather northwest, if you like, from this bluff and looking across Galilee and the sort of double-topped peak there to the left of this picture is the Horns of Hattin, site of a major battle during the Crusades. And we are actually standing on Mount Arbel. We move down to the Jezreel Valley, south from Galilee. This is a more or less east-west valley. It actually runs from northwest to south, southeast, connecting the coast with the Jordan Valley. This separates Samaria to the south from Galilee to the north, and is the easiest way to get from the coast to the Rift Valley, or vice versa, and so rather important route, if you like, for travel from even ancient times. And important trade routes ran through that area. Here's a picture of Jezreel Valley taken from up on the Megiddo Pass on the south side of the Jezreel Valley. And looking across, the weather is pretty clear. You get a feel and you're looking at the hills in the background there are Lower Galilee. The stuff to the left there is actually a cloud bank rather than hills. Here's Mount Carmel, a large ridge on the south side of the Jezreel Valley. Maximum height runs up to about 1,800 feet. It's a barrier to north-south travel. The Jezreel Valley runs kind of east-west on the north side of it and allows you to get down into the Rift Valley from the coast, etc. But for even getting along the coast at this area, Mount Carmel forms a barrier to the north-south travel. And so trade routes go through the passes in Mount Carmel. The city of Megiddo controls one such pass, and that often known as Mount Megiddo, presumably the tell on which Megiddo set. And our word Armageddon comes from that, the name for an eschatological battle, but also a site where a number of battles were held in antiquity, where forces moving either north or south were resisted at the passes which they would have to pass through and where they could be most easily attacked. We turn then to the wilderness of Judea. This is actually located in the rain shadow of the hill country. It's a badlands region, basically east of Jerusalem, but extending up and down the edge of the Rift Valley, some distance from Jerusalem. It's virtually uninhabited due to the combination of poor rainfall and poor soil. The picture we see here does kind of have a look like the badlands of South Dakota, if you have been out in that area. It is, however, used for grazing sheep in the winter season, which is the wetter season in that particular locality, because it does grow some grass at that time. The wilderness of Judea, we believe, is the site of Jesus' temptations at the beginning of his ministry. Here's a picture taken in the wilderness of Judea of a Bedouin tent and the owner's sheep, I guess. And you can see it looked certainly like a rather barren place. This was taken, I believe, in January, so in the middle of the winter, wetter season. And yes, if you look carefully in the foreground, you can see what it looks like might be a little bit of grass, but not overloaded with it. We move further south to the Negev. This is located in the southern part of the hill country, miles below Jerusalem, down around Hebron and Beersheba. It's an arid region south of Hebron. Flat or fairly rolling terrain. The soil is really good for agriculture. The rainfall is not. The fact that we get little rainfall down here is not primarily due to the rain shadow effect of the moisture coming off the Mediterranean, but perhaps due to the fact that we are getting to very low latitude now and the rainfall begins to fall off at this area. Plus, we've also gotten to the bottom edge of the Mediterranean, and so the air coming across this region is often coming from across the Sahara Desert rather than across the Mediterranean. Agriculture is possible in this area and has been carried on to a limited extent since ancient times using various tricks to concentrate the water. The major trick that is used is to pick a basin of some sort, and basically in the bottom of this basin dam up the rainfall runoff there, and you basically have a small area at the bottom of the basin which the water collects from the occasional rains, and so you can actually, in a sense, magnify the effective rainfall for a small area at the bottom of the basin by however much the whole size of the basin, the proportion of that to the little area you're farming, if you like. So if you're farming perhaps a hundredth of the territory, then not counting evaporation, you can get perhaps most of the rainfall from your whole basin from 100 times the area. Here's a picture taken in the Negev, and the terrain looks a little bit different. It, again, is a picture with a camel and a Bedouin tent in it. You can see the terrain is perhaps a little flatter, and it's got a little bit more brush in it than we saw in our picture of the wilderness of Judah. There's the camel there inside that ellipse. We turn to look at the major bodies of water around Palestine, and the first of these is the Mediterranean Sea, the second, the Sea of Galilee, the third, the Jordan River, and the fourth, the Dead Sea. So let's look at each of these in turn as well. Here's a picture taken of the Mediterranean Sea in January near Akko, southwest of Palestine. The Mediterranean Sea itself is a large body of salt water, perhaps 1,700 miles or so east-west and about 500 miles north-south. The width of it north-south varies rather drastically. The Mediterranean Sea connects to the Atlantic at Gibraltar, in some sense it's an arm of the Atlantic Ocean, though the connection there at Gibraltar is quite a small connection, and the Mediterranean is fed by a number of rivers and such, so the salt level in the Mediterranean is much lower than the Atlantic. Mediterranean Sea has been a major transportation route from ancient times, but however, Palestine has few ports. The shape of the seacoast has an effect on that. So the Jews were typically middlemen in transport rather than sailors. Goods were brought across the Mediterranean and into various ports, either down in Egypt or up in the area of Phoenicia, and then transported across the Palestine from Egypt or down or across from the Phoenician ports. And so the Jews were typically middlemen rather than the sailors and such. Here's a picture out on the coast of the Mediterranean near Ashkelon, and you can see at this time a number of tankers that are moored at the moment off shore there, and some people playing around in the surf. Move up to the Sea of Galilee. This picture is taken on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. In the background, you can see Mount Arbel, the plateau, dropping down rather abruptly there at the left side. Looking through the gap, you can see the two peaks of the Horns of Hattin. And then down here on the shore, you can see a palm tree and some other buildings around the location of Capernaum. Sea of Galilee is a freshwater lake. About 7 miles wide, its widest about 13 miles long. It's fed by the Jordan River coming in from the north, and the surface of the Sea of Galilee is 600 feet below sea level. So it's much lower below sea level than Death Valley is in the United States, but because the water has an outlet at the bottom end, it's not stagnant, and it does not become a salt sea like we see here at the Dead Sea further south. The source and the outlet of the Sea of Galilee are both called the Jordan River, and the Jordan River is Sea of Galilee is an important place for fishing. You can see that reflected in the gospel accounts of the apostles, several of whom were fishermen. The Sea of Galilee has got rather peculiar topography, which allows violent storms. It is, after all, 600 feet below sea level, and it's only, 30 miles or so from the Mediterranean Sea. So here we have a rather substantial arm of the Atlantic Ocean, only about 30 miles away and at 600 feet higher level. You can see the gorge coming down to the Sea of Galilee there on the west, with the Horns of Hattin in the background. To the north of the Sea of Galilee, you don't have to go too far until you get up onto the slopes of Mount Hermon, 9,000 feet high. So there's a big difference in elevations around here. And you don't have to go very far east until you're out into the Syrian desert. So some very drastically different climates, the very moist maritime climate of the Mediterranean, the very dry desert climate to the east of the Syrian desert, the cold, snow-covered areas up on Mount Hermon, hot areas in the Syrian desert and down the Rift Valley to the south. This peculiar topography often allows rather violent storms, and one of these figures rather importantly in the ministry of Jesus, where he stills the storm and rescues the his disciples under that circumstance. Here's a picture of the Sea of Galilee seen from the horns of Hattin. And so the Sea of Galilee is off in the background, mostly here to the center and right of the picture. The thing sticking up there in the center of the picture is Mount Arbel. And you can actually see a little white reflection from the Mount Hermon there off to the horizon and near the left-hand edge of the picture. We move on to the Jordan River. It begins in the north on the lower slopes of Mount Hermon and then descends through the Sea of Galilee to end at the Dead Sea. This particular picture is taken, I believe, a little above the Sea of Galilee, and we are the picture taken from down in the rather heavy growth right around the Jordan River. The Jordan River drops about 2,300 feet in 100 miles as the crow flies. The river, however, meanders over that distance, so the river winds perhaps 250 miles as it travels from lower slopes of Mount Hermon to the Dead Sea. Here's a picture of the Jordan River taken from Belvoir, that Crusader castle I mentioned, and again, the castle itself is out of the picture behind us. But if you look at this picture kind of right at mid-ground on the left side, you can see a little bit of water coming towards you. That's the Jordan River. And then if you look over at the same mid-ground near the right side of the picture, you can see another meander of the Jordan River. Most of the rest of the water here are fish ponds that have been artificially made there to raise fish in this particular area. And in the background, you're seeing the lower slopes that go up to the Transjordan Plateau. This picture taken from Belvoir with the telephoto lens. Move down to the Dead Sea. The surface of the Dead Sea is the lowest point on the surface of the Earth. It's almost 1,300 feet below sea level. The water is extremely salty, so that fish cannot live in it. Quite a bit more salty than the ocean is, which, of course, fish can live in. objects float unusually well in this water because the salty water is more dense than regular seawater or freshwater is, and so human body floats unusually well. You can see a picture here of John McCrae, Presbyterian pastor and son of Dr. Alan McCrae, founder of Biblical Seminary, and you can raise your arms up and you still float with your head above water in the Dead Sea, which you can't do in regular less salty water, very like fresh water, anything of that sort. Also understand that it is pretty tough on you since the salt water makes your cuts sting. So if you've shaved yourself recently, you will feel that pretty badly. The Dead Sea, the high salt level in the Dead Sea meant that the water contained considerable number of minerals. And that was mined both in antiquity and today for these minerals, done by evaporating the water and collecting the salts from that. That was done in antiquity and is done so today as well. Here's a picture of the Dead Sea further up the shore on the left shore near En Gedi. We move then from physical features of Palestine to the political features of Palestine, and we're here concerned with the political divisions at the time of Jesus' ministry, not the political visions today or other times in history. We're also going to look at the cities of Palestine at the same time, at the major roads then, and at the fortifications which King Herod the Great had built at that period, which still remain. One of the reasons why Herod is called the Great is not because he was a great guy, but because he was one of the wealthiest people to take a serious benevolent interest in building structures in Palestine. And so most of the really impressive structures from antiquity that survive in Palestine today were built by Herod the Great. Well, political divisions. Here's a map of Palestine in New Testament times with the political divisions shown by boundaries in red, and then we have labeled them with letters of the alphabet for these particular divisions. Judea, a province of the Roman Empire, later mostly, is labeled A, Galilee labeled B, Perea labeled C, the Tetrarchy of Philip labeled D, and the Decapolis labeled E. Let's look at each of those in turn. Judea also included at this time the territories called Samaria and Idumea. That is, not only the territory that had been the tribal inheritance of the tribe of Judah, but also the area settled after the fall of the northern kingdom by the people we call the Samaritans, a mixture, we believe, of Israelites that had remained in that area and various pagans of other ethnic groups that had come into the area. Idumea was an area that the Edomites, when they were driven out of their home territory, had moved across the Rift Valley and settled in and been part of the territory of Judah. And, been part of the territory of Judah before that time. The population of Judea during New Testament times was mostly Jews, although a number of Edomites had been forced to become Jews. There were Gentiles in Samaria and Idumea. The rulers, Herod the Great was the ruler during his lifetime of this territory. When he passed away, he willed this territory to his son Archelaus. And then when Archelaus was deposed, this area was ruled over by Roman governors. There was a brief period from 41 to 44 A.D. in which Herod the Great's grandson, Herod Agrippa I, was given this territory to rule as king of the Jews, the last Jewish person to be given the title king of the Jews until even today. After Herod Agrippa's untimely death in 44 A.D., it was again governed by Roman governors. Galilee is the area west of the Sea of Galilee, and it was the territory of the northern tribes until they were carried off by the Assyrians into captivity. Then it became territory of the Gentiles until the Jews under the leadership of the Maccabees took it back. This would be after about 140 A.D., so about 140 to about 100 B.C., 140 to about 100 B.C., the Maccabees reconquered this territory. That's part of the reason then why Joseph and Mary live up in Nazareth in New Testament times, is that has been taken back from the Gentiles a century or so before. Mm. The rulers of Galilee were Herod the Great during his rule of the whole eastern area here, about 30 B.C. to about 4 B.C., and then this part of Herod's territory at his death was willed to and confirmed by the Roman Emperor Augustus to go to Herod's son Herod Antipas. And so he ruled that until his death in the 30s, until he was banished in the 30s. And then Roman governors took over that. Again, Herod Antipas's nephew, Herod the Great's grandson, Herod Agrippa I, came to control this from 41 to 44 A.D., a gift from the Romans, and then the Roman governors came back after his untimely death. Perea is a region, narrow strip, east of the Jordan River, running from the middle of the Rift Valley up to the Transjordan Plateau. After the Maccabean conquest, this was inhabited mainly by Jews, and it had the same rulers as Galilee. Tetrarchy of Philip is a region northeast of the Sea of Galilee, sometimes known by its regional areas, Iturea, Trachonitis, etc. This territory was multi-ethnic, some Jews in it, but mostly Gentiles. It was part of Herod the Great's territory, and at Herod's death it went to Philip. So rulers, Herod the Great, Philip the Tetrarch, And when Philip died in the 30s, it went to Roman governors, came back to Herod Agrippa I during his brief reign, and then back to Roman governors again. Lastly, among the territories, the Decapolis. The Decapolis was a league of Hellenistic cities with the territories they controlled. The name Decapolis means 10 cities. It was mostly Gentiles, mostly inhabited by Gentiles, but was under the Maccabees during the height of their power and then taken away from them when the Romans came and made independent of Jewish control. Cities of Palestine. Well, again, we look at our Palestine map, and here we will number the cities we're going to look at. Jerusalem, numbered 1. Caesarea, or Caesarea Maritima, numbered 2. Sebaste, number 3. Tiberias, number 4. And Caesarea Philippi, numbered 5. We'll not say anything in detail about those. Let me say this much about them. Jerusalem was the Jewish capital of Palestine, if you like. It was, of course, the temple city since the time of Solomon. And although that temple had been destroyed for about 70 years during the time of the Babylonian captivity, it had been rebuilt, and it had been recently refurbished by Herod the Great in starting about 20 B.C. and going on even past his lifetime. So this was a city to which the Jews came up for their pilgrim festivals three times a year, and was very important in that direction. Caesarea on the coast had been built by Herod the Great to actually with an artificially constructed harbor to provide a seaport for him. It was named in honor of Caesar and had become, after Herod's death, the Roman capital of Palestine and had a population of both Jews and Gentiles. Sebaste was the city that was rebuilt by Herod the Great and named Sebaste, which is sort of the Greek translation of the Latin word Augustus, had been named in honor of Caesar Augustus. That was had been Samaria, the capital of the northern kingdom of Israel during the period of the divided kingdom, Israel and Judah, and was now rebuilt by Herod the Great. And that became largely a Gentile city. Tiberias, number 4, on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, was named in honor of the Roman Emperor Tiberius, spelled with a U-S instead of an A-S, that became the capital of Galilee. So Herod Antipas's capital was there. He built that during his reign. And then Caesarea Philippi was built during the rule of Philip over his tetrarchy to be his capital. So the Caesarea of Philip was the name of that one, and the other one, Caesarea number 2, is Caesarea Maritima, Caesarea on the seacoast, on the sea, if you like. Major roads, we will mark these off in lines here, in white lines on this map, is the Via Maris, the highway that ran up the Mediterranean coast. It had a branch that ran over north of the Sea of Galilee and off to Damascus as well. The word Via Maris is Latin for the way of the sea, and that particular title is borrowed from a passage in Isaiah, which speaks of the activity of the Messiah in connection with the way of the sea. Coastal road from Egypt to Antioch, the one running up the coast, and the branch that ran off to the east, northeast, is the branch running over to Damascus. The King's Highway, which we mark in yellow on this map, ran up basically the Transjordan Plateau, and this ran from the Gulf of Aqaba down on the Red Sea along the Transjordan Plateau to Damascus, was also an important trade route. A more minor route, but certainly rather important for the Jews because it ran right through their territory, is marked here in this brownish dotted line, is the Ridge Route, and this basically runs up through the hill country and connects Jerusalem northward up to Galilee, and then connects Jerusalem southward down towards, headed off towards Egypt as well. Well, we move on to say a word or two about the Herodian fortifications. We just marked three of them here on our map. Machaerus at A, located east of the Dead Sea. This is where John the Baptist was killed, according to Josephus. Masada, marked B, west of the Dead Sea. And this was the was built by Herod as well, as Machaerus was, and was intended as in a kind of a winter palace. It was in a warm location. And after Herod's death and at the outbreak of the Jewish revolt against Rome in 66 AD, this was taken over by the Zealots, and this was the last place that was taken back by the Romans in 72 AD, I believe that is, the last stand of the Zealots. Herodium, item C, was another fortification of Herod near Bethlehem. there is a statement by Josephus that indicates that Herod was buried here, although Herod's tomb has never been found so far. One of those lost sites that treasure hunters would like to find. Well, I've got a couple pictures here. This is a picture of Masada. You can see in the background the Dead Sea. Masada is a butte or bluff or tableland sitting well up above the land around the Dead Sea and formed kind of a fortified little island of some sort, several thousand feet long and perhaps 500 feet or so wide. The north end of it, which is here to the left in this picture, had Herod's palaces on it. You can see in the right middle ground the remains of a ramp that the Romans built to attack the fortification when the Zealots were holed up inside and the Romans were trying to put down the last of the rebellion against Rome in Israel. So that ramp still remains today. It's doubtless eroded down a good bit, but they rolled some kind of siege engines up that ramp and finally broke through the wall. But by the time they got in, the Zealots had all committed suicide. This picture of Herodium, kind of a volcano-shaped palace of Herod, a fortified palace, if you like. He had other palace facilities and recreational facilities down at the base of this, but it was a natural hill which had been heightened by Herod and built a fortified palace at the top. Well, that's our quick tour of Palestinian geography, and the comment here at the end, knowing geography helps us in understanding the narrative of the Old Testament and the Gospels and the Acts. And for Palestinian geography, the Old Testament, the Gospels in particular, for the Acts, some in the early part of Acts, but more Mediterranean geography would be helpful there.